We come in contact with plants daily. We see them, eat them, wear clothes, sit on furniture, and live in houses made from them. And we take medicines derived from them. Though plants are one of the youngest kingdoms of life, in their 400 million years on Earth, they have become its most conspicuous organisms. Plants affect all the kingdoms of life on the planet. Five kingdoms of life. The plants. Plants produce most of the food used by land animals and fungi, along with most of the oxygen they use for metabolism. Both the food and oxygen are products of photosynthesis, a chemical reaction using the energy of sunlight to produce sugar from carbon dioxide and water. At one time, all photosynthetic organisms were classed as plants, but now many are classed as protists. The brown alga on the left, for instance, is in the protist kingdom, and the photosynthetic cyanobacteria to the right are in the kingdom Monera. Plant photosynthesis occurs in chloroplasts, cellular organelles that contain the green pigment chlorophyll. Chloroplasts are also the photosynthetic organelles of green algae. For that and other reasons, botanists think that plants evolved from an ancestor among the protist phylum of green algae. Taxonomists group plants into several phyla. A major division is based on the presence or absence of a vascular system, a network of xylem and phloem tubes to carry liquids through a plant's tissues. Taxonomic placement is also based on a plant's reproductive cycle. Similarities and differences in life cycle indicate evolutionary relationships among plants. For instance, some plant groups reproduce by means of spores and others by means of seeds. All the non-vascular plants are grouped in the bryophyte phylum, mosses and liverworts. Partly because these plants have no vascular tubes to transport water and nutrients, they tend to be small and to thrive in moist places such as shady forest floors. Even so, some bryophytes are adapted to dry habitats such as rock outcrops as long as these areas are moistened periodically. During dry periods, these moss plants become dormant. Moss mats are important in holding soil and moisture during the stages of plant succession of these outcrops. In the patches of moss, seeds and spores of other plants can germinate and develop. The sexual organs of bryophytes are called antheridia if male and archegonia if female. The bristly tufts on these haircap mosses are antheridia. Sperm swim from these through a film of rainwater to fertilize eggs in nearby archegonia. After fertilization, the developing embryo becomes the spore-forming stalk of the moss called the sporophyte. The foot of this sporophyte remains attached to the female structure in which it developed. After their spores are dispersed, these brown sporophytes wither away. Spores are the dispersal structures of several plant phyla, among them ferns, horsetails, and club mosses, as well as bryophytes. Typically, a spore develops directly into a photosynthetic structure like this moss protonema. A protonema grows by cell division. Where it touches the ground, root-like rhizoids anchor it, and a typical moss plant grows. From the spreading growth of a single protonema like this, an entire carpet of moss plants can develop. Like mosses, liverworts are bryophytes. Liverworts often form spongy carpets on stream banks or other moist areas. Many of them have flattened branches forming a thallus. Like mosses, liverworts produce spores. But many also disperse in another way. Tiny cups on the thallus contain bits of plant tissue attached with thin threads. Heavy raindrops splash these particles away from the plant. If a particle is deposited on moist soil, it develops into a new plant. The club mosses, or lycopods, often resemble tiny conifer trees. In fact, many people call them ground pine or running cedar. Several species have club-shaped stalks that produce spores. These stalks inspired the name club moss, but unlike the true mosses, club mosses are vascular plants. A stem cross-section shows the vascular tubes that transport water, minerals, and food through the plant's tissues. The tiny leaves, called microphylls, do not contain vascular branches as the leaves of ferns and seed plants do. A vascular system allows for greater size than we find among the mosses and liverworts. Though most living species of club mosses happen to be fairly small, ancient species formed great forests about 300 million years ago. Another plant phylum with giant ancestors is the horsetails. One living species reaches a height of 30 feet, but most are from 2 to 4 feet high. Horsetails were once called scouring rushes because the gritty silica deposits in their stems made them handy for scrubbing cookpots. This grit may be an adaptation that discourages grazing animals from eating the plants. Horsetails have unusual photosynthetic spores with flaps called elaters. When dry, these elaters unwind and catch the wind to carry the spores great distances. When a spore passes over an area of wet soil, the moisture-sensitive elaters curl up, and the spore drops to the ground, where it germinates. Ferns are probably the most familiar of the spore-bearing vascular plants. We admire the delicate fronds of many species. These fronds are true leaves, containing branches of the vascular system. Fern leaves typically branch upward from a creeping stem called a rhizome. A new frond begins its growth as a tightly coiled fiddlehead that later uncurls and expands to reveal a complete leaf. As with the club mosses and horsetails, many ancient ferns were larger than modern species. Living reminders of them are several varieties of tropical tree ferns that may reach a height of 40 feet. Their fronds uncurl from the top of a trunk rather than from a creeping rhizome. Some ferns produce spores in pouches called sori on the backs of their leaves. Others have specialized fertile fronds that bear spores. A fern spore develops into a leafy pad called a prothallium that anchors itself with rhizoids. On the prothallium, eggs and sperm are produced. A sperm from an antheridium swims through a film of water to fertilize the egg in a tiny archegonium, producing an embryo. The embryo in the archegonium develops into a new fern plant that begins its life attached to the prothallium. As the new plant gains strength, the prothallium disintegrates. All the plants mentioned so far disperse by means of spores. Many other plants disperse by means of seeds. There are several differences between the two groups. The eggs of spore-dispersing plants are fertilized by sperm that must swim through water. The seed plant's sperm occur within pollen grains. Pollen grains may travel great distances through the air before fertilizing eggs. A seed develops right after sexual reproduction, so it contains the embryo of a new plant. Here is an embryonic plant inside a kidney bean. A spore develops into a plant that later undergoes sexual reproduction and produces an embryo. The embryo then develops into a new spore-producing plant. A seed contains stored food on which the young seedling lives till it can make its own food. The albino corn seedling, shown here, has grown to this size on its stored food alone. Since it cannot make its own food, it will soon die. But the green seedling, already producing food, will continue to grow. Scientists are unsure of the ultimate origin of seeds. Many fossils exist of a widespread and diverse group of plants called seed ferns. These plants looked like ferns, but they produced true seeds, often at the ends of the fronds. At least some of the existing groups of seed plants probably evolved from various seed ferns. An ancient phylum of seed plants is the cycads. Most cycads are tropical plants that resemble small palm trees. They usually have very deep and thick taproots. Cycads are often grown ornamentally, both indoors and out. Cycads produce male and female cones. Pollen is carried from male to female cones mainly by the wind, but some is transported by insects. The ginkgo phylum included many species in the past. Now, only one survives. It probably no longer lives in the wild, but is widely planted as an ornamental. Ginkgo trees do well in cities because they're resistant to insects and to air pollution. Conifers include many species of cone-bearing plants, such as pines, spruces, redwoods, and cedars. Most are trees, but a few are shrubs or low-growing woody plants. Many are especially well adapted for life in cold or dry climates. They dominate the landscape in cold, far northern, or in dry mountainous areas. Conifers are so named for their cones. The male, or pollen cones, are usually smaller than the female cones. Male cones generally produce pollen, release it, and fall to the ground, all within a few weeks. The pollen is dispersed by wind. The grains that land on female cones are channeled down between scales to fertilize eggs in tiny ovules. After most of its ovules contain pollen, a cone's scales clamp shut and it grows. Within the cone, embryos form in the ovules, which become seeds. When the seeds mature, the cone scales open and release them. In some species, heat from fires is required to open the scales. Such species have adapted to colonize burned-over areas. Some conifers' cones are fleshy, somewhat like berries. Juniper cones are eaten by birds, which later deposit the seeds. Often, junipers are found along fences or below power lines where birds perch. Conifers are important producers of lumber and of pulp for paper. Tree farming is a huge industry, and conifers comprise a major part of that crop. Scientists worry that planted conifer forests of the future may be more vulnerable to insects or disease than diverse forests allowed to develop naturally. But it takes a long time for a natural forest to develop, and people use wood and paper rapidly. By far the largest phylum of plants is the angiosperms, the flowering plants. Though they are the most recently evolved plants, angiosperms have taken over the landscape. Scientists estimate that there may be 1 million species. Previously unknown species are still being discovered, not just in unexplored areas of the tropics, but in our own backyards. Only angiosperm seeds develop in ovaries, female structures enclosed within flowers. After eggs are fertilized by pollen, the ovary usually grows and swells around them. Ovaries containing mature seeds are called fruits. Often, the fruit is an adaptation to attract animals that disperse the seeds. Angiosperm fruits are extremely important to us and to many other animals as food. Angiosperms may also attract animals for purposes other than spreading seeds. Bees, for instance, feed on pollen and on the sweet liquid nectar within flowers. In the process, they spread pollen from male structures to female structures. Pollinating insects, birds, and bats have evolved along with flowers for millions of years. Without animal pollinators, many plants could not make seeds, and without the flowers, the animals would have no food. A few plants attract animals for their own food. Venus flytraps capture flies and other insects and digest them to supplement the minerals taken up by their roots. This is another of the thousands of evolutionary adaptations that link plants and other kingdoms. Plants produce and store many complex chemical compounds that sicken or repel insects or other herbivores. Often, these compounds prove useful as medicines, narcotics, or insecticides. Nicotine and caffeine are everyday examples of such compounds. Chemical analysis of newly discovered plants often reveals an unknown chemical that may have medical or agricultural applications. This is one reason why people hate to see unexplored forests destroyed for lumber or for farmland. Plants have evolved in conjunction not just with animals, but with fungi as well. Tiny fungal strands, called mycorrhizae, attach to plant roots greatly increase a plant's absorption of minerals. The strands are seen here as the blue fuzz surrounding the root section. In many cases, this plant-fungus relationship is vital to the plant's health. As a whole, the plant kingdom is extremely important in maintaining the current balance of the biosphere, the living Earth. Not only do plants supply much of the atmosphere's oxygen, but they remove carbon dioxide and pollutants. Vegetation even affects climate. Removing the vegetation from large areas can turn them into eroded deserts. This is happening on a large scale in the tropics, as relatively poor countries take quick advantage of their natural resources to meet the immediate needs of their expanding populations, a pattern of behavior they learned from those of us in developed nations.